Good morning and welcome to Backstage Pass, your VIP all access to the 1-2 family. I am Raven McMinn and I am joined by my wonderful co-host, the 1-2 wizard, Jay Varvel. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Raven. It's great to be here with you all.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing good, doing good. This show is your opportunity to get to know the host of 1-2 Radio and the advisors at 1-2 Listen and special guests that we have on the show like we have today on a more personal level. So feel free to utilize our Facebook chat room where you can ask questions during the show and leave comments for our guest. Jay, you want to tell them how to get to the Facebook chat room?
Yes, I will. You can do that by heading over to 12radio.com. That's the number 12radio.com. Click on the chat button there on the left-hand side of the screen once you're there. It does open up a brand new window. It is to a private Facebook group under the same name, 12radio. If this is your first time, send over an invitation. We'll get you approved while we're live on the air. And once you are in, you will see the banner for Backstage Pass at the top of the page. Please give it a like. And then in the comments section is where the conversation's happening. And that's where you can place your comments. And that's where you can join us in the conversation. So, Raven, who is coming on today? I'm very excited about this.
We have a very special guest today. We have Ravinder Taylor in the house, in the hot seat, as we like to call it. And she has written a book, along with her husband, Elton Taylor. And most of you will probably know those names because they have a syndicated radio show. And that also used to play here on 1-2 Radio a lot on Sundays. I don't think it does anymore, but you'll remember them from the past. And this is a really important book. It's called Mind Training, The Science of Self-Empowerment. And I want to read a little bit about the press release on this before we bring her in. And hold on here. This is a different type of self-empowerment book because it combines elements of brain science and theoretical research and psychology, along with practical applications of, you know, self-help programs that are designed to promote psychological health and more effective personal functioning. So deeper self-knowledge and understanding are gained by an examination of science-based principles, exploring how the mind works, which is really important. I know a lot goes on in the subconscious mind that we're not even aware of, right? In a clear and concise way, co-authors Ravinder and Elton Taylor offer the reader numerous opportunities for self-reflection and for applying self-empowering behavioral strategies using exercises contained in the book. So if you want to get beyond the wishy-washy feel-goodism in your quest for insight and self-determining and have more authentic living, then you seriously need to take a look at this book. And I'll let Ravinder speak to the rest of it here, but I just wanted to kind of give everybody a quick overview of that. And Ravinder, welcome to 1-2 Radio and welcome to Backstage Pass. Come on in.
Hi, Raven. Hi, Jay. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You are our first guest that is not a 1-2 Listen advisor or radio host. And we've always wanted to do this, to break out and interview, you know, authors like yourself and other people that are important contributors to the community. And so you're the very first one. So,
well, that's a real honor.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. That's a real honor. I'm a fan of 1-2 Radio anyway. As you said, our show used to be on there as well. We actually went on sabbatical in order to do the work for mind training. There was a great deal of research that went into that, a great deal of time and focus that it took. So we'll be bringing Provocative Enlightenment back soon, I think, and hopefully we'll be back on 1-2 Radio again.
That's the name. I couldn't think of the radio. I was just racking my brain trying to remember the name of your show, Provocative Enlightenment. Yes, I used to listen to that every Sunday. Yes, I'm a big fan. And so that's why you took a sabbatical, was to write this book. Okay, well, that explains it. That was my next question, is why did you stop doing it?
So tell us this book. What was the impetus? What was the initial inspiration that caused you to go down this line of research and to really dig in and then inevitably write this book?
The impetus actually came from a research study that I came across in 2011. It was to do with a 12-minute meditation that was shown to create improvements in lots of different areas like brain function and memory. And the research behind it was very, very solid. But there was some basic information that came out front that I knew to be incorrect. So I went digging around in this research, and it's like the results they had from it were very, very solid. This 12-minute meditation absolutely works. But the reasonings behind it were incorrect. I think, when it comes to the whole field of self-help and self-improvement, it gets a bad rap when ideas can get distorted. There are some people who will make really high claims to everything. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to bring it back to reality, and I wanted to truly empower the reader to understand the research that's gone behind it. When you really understand it, then you have the ability to tweak it and personalize it. The fact is, we are all different. We all have, different preferences, different things that we can do or can't do. So I wanted to create a book that was truly self-empowering. And what happened was, I came across this research study, and I started working on a book. The preliminary title for the book that I started working on was Bottling the Placebo Effect: The Real Secret to Health, Wealth, and the Fountain of Youth. So I was working on that, and at the same time, Eldon was working on the mind training book. And when he handed me the outline of the book, I realized, it was pretty obvious, the two of us have worked together for so long, but I realized how much overlap there was between it. So we decided to combine the books. And what we did was I took all of my own experiences, my own passions, the kinds of science that I find the most interesting, the questions I wanted answered, and I overlaid that on the grid work that Eldon had already started with his mind training book. So mind training is, it's a collaboration between the two of us, but it's written totally in my own voice with my own experiences.
Ah, I see. Okay. And well, mind training is all science-based. So is there any place for spirituality in an effective self-help program?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As I said, that the field of self-help gets a bad rap. And that's because it isn't so science-based. Oftentimes, you can put forward inspirational ideas, you can put forward tips and techniques, but when you don't understand what is going on behind it, you don't have the ability to make it your own. So mind training is 100% science-based. But if you read through it, you will see these elements that come through, the elements of forgiveness and gratitude. One of the things that was huge for me in working on the book was the number of places where I say it's humbling to realize quite how automatically your body behaves, your mind behaves, your actions. There is so much that goes on automatic pilot. The mind-body connection is, there's a great deal of automaticity in that. And I found that really humbling. And when you're humble, you have the ability to hear more and judge less. The spirituality absolutely comes through. I do a great deal of reading in these areas, and I don't know if you're familiar with Sapolsky's book Determined, and he talks about the idea of free will, and he categorically says that free will doesn't exist, and he goes through all of the science, and it all makes great sense. It's all, it's very, very well done. But even there, I found spirituality in it as well. When he talks about some of the experiments, if I remember correctly, there was something he was talking about having neurons in a Petri dish. And in a Petri dish, when it's just two-dimensional, they would move around at random. But as soon as it went three-dimensional, when it's in like a beaker, they would start to form structures. And to me, That was incredibly spiritual. I came down and said, I found God in Sapolsky's book. It's there.
Wow.
There's a whole lot more there. And I find that continually, you know, mind training, we talk about free will. We say that it doesn't exist, but there are places where it does. And when you actively participate in it, when you wake up to your own potential, when you start paying attention to how your own subconscious mind gets programmed in the first place, then you have the ability to create change in the world. And to me, that is true spirituality, when you work to become the best person that you can be, and then you teach that by example. You don't teach it by preaching it. You become the change that you want to see. So spirituality, although that isn't the intention of the book, I wanted it to be a definite bridge between science and self-help. But those spiritual elements are absolutely there. And it's a huge part of my own life too.
So it's
interesting. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say that it's very interesting, that whole aspect of free will, or that question of free will. And I grew up in mainstream Christianity where, like you said, it was more told to you what it was instead of an experiential thing. For you, what has been most important in your research as far as now how you've been able to look at that whole idea of free will in your own way, from your own research and now that you've done that, what is the value to you that brings into the physical world or into your regular waking life that you've noticed a change with that added knowledge, with that added wisdom of your own meaning versus somebody else's meaning that you've taken on?
I think the biggest part of it, the biggest thing to realize here, is that free will is not free. If you're not paying attention to what is going on, then you won't have free will. But there's been a great deal of research that has been done that shows the influence of the subconscious mind. They've actually used fMRI, electrodes implanted in the brain, and all of these things show there's activity in the subconscious mind before you make a choice. In fact, using some of these techniques, technicians have been able to predict what you're going to choose up to 7 seconds before you choose it.
I've seen that. Wow.
And that is huge. That is huge when you realize that these choices aren't your own. So the biggest place, that the biggest influence you have, is in deciding how to program your subconscious mind. It's to realize that all of your experiences, your entire life, it's all there in the subconscious mind. And what happens is the subconscious mind wants to protect you from hurt and pain and guilt and shame. And so it puts strategies into place to protect you from doing that. But oftentimes those strategies are out of date. So take, for example, you know, perhaps in school, I mean, I had one of these examples. It's why for the longest time I had a phobia about public speaking. But I was at a school event, I must have been 9 or 10, and I had two roles that I had to play. So I had these two coconut shells that I was holding in my hand, and that was supposed to be the sound of horses galloping. So I was doing the sound effects for that. I was doing the sound effects for that, but then I had to do an oral part. So I quickly had to put down these coconut shells and do my little speech. Well, apparently it was a little clumsy how I did it, so the audience laughed at it. And it wasn't a mean laugh, but I still felt awkward. I was still embarrassed by it. And I think that played a huge role in why, for the longest time, I would totally refuse to do public speaking. So when you understand that, you know, the subconscious mind is just trying to protect you, when you question the subconscious mind, when you understand that all this information is in there, it can be buried to a degree, but the more you question your subconscious mind, the more you understand that is where the information is, the more the subconscious mind will bring you the answers to, you know, why you can repeatedly have these self-destructive behaviors, why, you know, maybe some people are constantly getting into bad relationships, why in my, you know, in my own example, I was so afraid of public speaking. I've dug into my own subconscious mind to find out why I had this habit of chewing on my fingers. And as soon as you see these things, the problem can frequently go away by itself. You know, these subconscious strategies to protect you from hurt and pain, well, they only work when you're not aware of them. As soon as you're aware of them, they lose their power. So frequently, that can be enough to make them go away. It is just the awareness of the amount of power that you have in your mind. It's how powerful the mind is, how it can affect, you know, all aspects of your life. But when you appreciate it, when you take care of it, and that's what I do. So if there's people around me and, you know, if someone says things like, oh, at our age, we need to start taking it slower. No, cancel. You know, that can be a way to take out that. You don't want that to be programmed into your subconscious mind. You don't want to think that old age means becoming decrepit, you know, because for lots of us, it doesn't. But the more you program that in, the more you begin to slow down, the more your body stiffens up and you lose flexibility and you, you know, lose lung power because you're not using it, because you think that's what old age is. That's exactly what old age becomes.
Mm. So you get into that in your book. You say that the placebo response provides some of the best evidence for both the power of the mind and enculturated beliefs. Why is that?
Why is that? That is a huge question. It's, you know, we are herd animals. We want to belong. We want to be considered normal. You know, if we can't be special, we want to at least be normal. We don't want to be bottom of the pack. We take in the ideas all around us. So the placebo effect, yeah, they have discovered that the placebo effect can be more powerful if it's a capsule as opposed to a tablet, or an injection as opposed to a capsule, or surgery. You know, they've actually looked at the placebo effect in knee surgeries, and they actually did a comparison looking at people who actually had knee surgery, people who had a fake knee surgery, and they found that the results were just as good, that the power of the mind, the beliefs. So the fact that your body, you know, with a placebo effect, you get to see your body has the ability to heal you. And when it comes to cultural things, there were some things that I actually found a little bit disquieting. You know, there is the research that showed that to African Americans, a white capsule was considered that would energize them. It would activate them. It would stimulate them. That was the word I was looking for. It would stimulate them, whereas a black was more an analgesic. But it's the other way around for Caucasian people. And that is like, you know, that bothered me. But there are other things that are around, you know, different countries. So in Germany, the placebo effect for the hypertension pill is low. When it comes to gastric treatments, the placebo effect in Brazil is low, but in Germany, it's really high. It is our need to be the same. It's how much we take on board. So if everyone around you is telling you this doesn't work, then it won't work for you. I mean, I look at that when it comes to homeopathy. I like homeopathy. Homeopathy works for me, and it sounds a whole lot more gentler approach than lots of other things. But I've recommended homeopathic treatments to friends and family, and they laugh and put it down and scoff, and it doesn't work for them. Well, that's their loss, I suppose. But it is this need to fit in, and that can override. You know, you can actually prevent your mind from healing yourself with some of these beliefs. If you believe that you are not going to get better, you won't get better. If you believe in the mind-body connection, if you believe that your mind can heal you, it will. There was a longitudinal study that we ran. We have an Inner Talk program. It's called the Spiritual Healing for Cancer Remission, and it's a free program. We don't sell the program. That's not something that we would do. And to this day, we give it away free. But, you know, a number of years ago, we ran a longitudinal study, and what we found is that if both the patient and the doctor believed in the mind-body connection, then the patient would frequently go into remission. We have lots of testimonials for people that attribute their remission to working with our program. They actually talk about working with our program, and they go back to see the doctor, and the cancer's gone.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think about the what you brought up at the beginning about the self-help world and the like kind of the woo-woo parts of it and the parts that sound great but, you know, are maybe feel really good to hear but they don't really like end up helping. So I hear some of those themes come up in what you're saying, but I do feel the science approach, like the part that feels way more scientific about it. How do you draw that line between being able to be open to the supposed or woo-woo, I'm going to call it, the spiritual, the unseen, but also not, like, how do you balance that out? Like, because it's easy to go on these, like these tirades about these different things that allegedly work and get so excited, and as you mentioned, but they don't really pan out. And you're talking about something that does pan out. How do you draw those lines?
I look at the science behind it. I look at who it is that is providing the information. I go, you know, personally, I go straight down the line of science. What happens frequently when it comes to some of these ideas, you know, you can hear something, be enthralled by it, find it fascinating, but then you share it with your partner and they knock it down. And when you don't have the support of your partner or your friends in your own self-help journey, that can be to your detriment. You need that additional support. So having the science behind it is of great value. I think for me, Jay, I hear everything that is said. I don't automatically say that's woo-woo, that's not going to work. I look at it and then I try to look at the science behind it. I look into myself. I question myself a great deal as to how something feels. If it feels, if it jives with me, now you know, you have to be a bit cautious there because you do have, you know, the confirmation bias. You'll basically hear what it is that you already believe. But I believe in questioning myself a whole lot more, looking at the difference. Understand that a great deal of these woo-woo ideas, I don't even like that word, I'm sorry, but it's convenient. A great deal of these woo-woo ideas do have a basis in science, that they do. So when you want to make it personal for yourself, dig into the science, actually find the research behind it. The advantage there is that when it comes to self-help, oftentimes you are taught these different steps to go through, but yet they don't explain why. They don't explain how it works. So to give you an example, I know I was talking to Eldon about this one day at lunch, and you know, why is it so important to look at the science behind it and say, so take for example, just a storyline, perhaps you have to have open heart surgery. You're on the table, your chest is open, the surgeon is working there. And, you know, oftentimes, as we've seen on TV, whenever there's a hospital show, there's often conversations going on, or maybe the surgeon likes a particular kind of music. But if you take this one instance and your particular surgeon is into self-help. So he is playing affirmations, audible affirmations on creativity, because in his free time, maybe he's trying to write a book. So he has these affirmations going on all the time. But for you, under anesthesia, it's going to be totally subliminal. So you have the surgery, the surgery is a success. And after the surgery, you find that your creativity suddenly explodes. This is wonderful. You know, I've just had open heart surgery and now I have all of these ideas. You know, maybe it's ideas for business, how to make your business better. Maybe it's creative writing. Maybe it's art, you know, whatever it can be. But it could be easy then to say it's the open heart surgery that gave me this creativity. The last thing you want to do is recommend to everybody, have open heart surgery if you want to increase your creativity. So understanding the science behind these things, you know, for a while the secret was really, really big. I am not a fan of the law of attraction because I think it's too simplistic, this ask, believe, receive. I don't believe that the universe is a cornucopia of abundance just waiting there for you. I do think we have a vast amount of ability, and you can say that it's just biological. You can say that it's God-given, this fact that your mind can heal your body. That, I mean, that is huge. But to me, I would change the ask, believe, receive to choose. You have to choose to make the change, and I'll explain in a moment why choosing is not necessarily that simple. Believe, you have to get into these subconscious beliefs. You have to work at programming your own mind to be more open to all of these different kinds of ideas. And then you have to allow it to happen. It's not going to come automatically. So when it comes to choice, an example that I enjoy sharing these days, my husband enjoys watching these survival type shows. Mm-hmm. And there's one that he watches where generally it's a man and a woman and they're dumped off in some extreme environment, a desert, a swamp, whatever. They're absolutely stark because they don't have any clothes whatsoever. And they're allowed to have three tools, you know, maybe a bottle to hold water, maybe a fire starter, something like that. And they have to survive 21 days. One of the things that I've enjoyed seeing is, you know, they invariably pair a man and a woman together. And sometimes they've got this big bodybuilder type guy. And so in comparison, the woman is small and more delicate looking. Frequently, I have seen this frequently on this show, it's the bodybuilder guy, this big butch man who taps out after 2 to 3 days. Now, yes, he wanted to complete the survival challenge that would definitely give him more macho appeal. But think about the choices. He has dedicated his life to building up the body beautiful. He's going to eat X amount of calories per day. He's going to be aware of the amount of protein in everything. He's going to be working out. He's taking care of the body. He's building it up. So then to go into this survival channel and they've gone 2 or 3 days without any food whatsoever, or just these tiny bits of fish or a tiny insect or a piece of fruit, you know, just a tiny fraction of the calories they normally consume. Now, in this show, at the end of it, they always indicate how much weight people have lost doing the challenge, and people invariably lose 20 or 30 pounds. Do you think a bodybuilder who has dedicated his life to building body beautiful is going to be okay with suddenly dropping 30 pounds of weight and muscle. So that choice, you know, they often tap out because they discover that in the priorities of choices, they are choosing the other one more than they are for completing the challenge. And we all have this in lots of different areas. So if you're trying to lose weight, and so you decide that you're not going to have any dessert, but in your subconscious mind, there is this programming that says, if I've had a hard day, I deserve a treat, because that's what makes the hard work feasible. That's what makes the hard work worthwhile, is if at the end of it, I can have a treat. Well, you can see how those choices come into conflict. You want to lose weight, but you've still got your work to do and you deserve a treat. You need a treat because you've programmed that into yourself. So choosing is a huge part of it. And understanding, you know, the deeper programming that goes into making those choices.
That's something that I just recently have been noticing for myself, is that idea of, maybe this is like another perspective of it, but where our choices, not only do they matter, but it's like there are certain choices that line up, for example, to being a single individual versus I want to have a partner and I want to build my life together with that person. And so that's a different set of choices. And like our reason is in there, like our reason for being, or our reason why we want to create it, I feel like is in that choice. And I really feel like you're really hitting on that on a whole different level, on the importance and the power of it, and why it's important for us to be the observer and really pay attention to like what it is that we really are thinking, and what is the driver behind that, and spending some time to witness that.
It is. And when it comes to personal relationships, you're absolutely correct. Any relationship that you're in, you are going to make sacrifices. You cannot just think about yourself. You have to think about your partner. You're going to end up going to see movies that don't interest you. You know, maybe you're a guy and you're going to see some chick flick, or maybe vice versa. You know, I've been to lots of action movies with my husband, and action movies don't do anything for me. So you make sacrifices, and so you have to choose what is more important to you. Oftentimes we hold on too tightly to this idea of, I have to be myself, I'm not going to sacrifice. I think that's one of the reasons lots of relationships can fall apart, because you're not prepared to do the work. Relationships aren't easy, and it's not magical. It's not a case of finding your soulmate and everything is perfect thereafter. All relationships take work, they take sacrifice, but the benefits can be huge. You know, it's really nice having someone that you can rely on, someone who's always going to be there. It's nice coming home to someone that you can share your day with. So you do have to decide for yourself what your priorities are, and realize that sometimes they take sacrifices, but the benefits are definitely there. When it comes to, you know, being in a relationship, people who are happily married live longer, live healthier, take better care of themselves. You know, when you're in a partnership, you help each other out. You help each other to become better people. So, if that means I have to go watch another action movie, that's fine. I'll do it to support my husband, just as he will do it to support me when there's something I want to go watch.
I love that. That's beautiful. And I've been jumping in here. Raven, do you have any questions that you want to ask? I know we were having a little technical difficulty with Raven's connection, and I think we might have still been losing her. Raven? All right. Well, then I will continue asking the questions. So does your book address moving from like one state of being and consciousness, and then moving yourself to another state of being and consciousness, like through any kind of particular process, or is this more just about presenting the information and then you do with it what you will.
No, I wouldn't describe it as moving to a different state of consciousness, but it's perfectly valid to look at it that way. As I said, mind training is very much science-based. Now, at the end of every single chapter of the book, it actually provides tools and tips for you to actually put them into action. There are things that you can do right away that are going to have benefits right away. I go through, there's a whole chapter on optimism and pessimism in there, and it defines really clearly the advantages to being more optimistic. It goes across all boundaries. So whether it's health, relationships, financial ability, you're going to do better if you're optimistic. Now you have to be a little bit careful here, because, you know, especially you come back to the self-help industry, where everything gets simplified. It's not just a case of constantly pretending to be optimistic. And that is a theme as well that you're going to find through mind training. You know, some of these things you can't pretend to be. They actually did some research where they discovered that optimism to the point of denial is a key factor in cancer for females. It's part of the cancer profile for females. When it comes to financial, those people who told themselves that they were going to make $1 billion by the time in 2 years' time, you know, when they set unrealistic ideals out there, they ended up being more depressed. So you definitely need realism in there. And all pessimism isn't necessarily bad. You know, I think what I'm trying to say here is there are some people, because they're pessimistic, they expect a worst outcome. So they prepare for the worst outcome. They put things in place to prevent the worst outcome from happening. So on the surface, it can look like pessimism, but there's really a degree of optimism in there, because some part of them believes that if they take these other actions, then the worst thing will not come to pass. So mind training, at the end of every single chapter, so when it comes to optimism and pessimism, it talks about journaling, it talks about those what if scenarios, you know, the idea of perhaps the worst thing won't even happen. Or if it does happen, how do you prepare for it? How can you reduce the impact of it? So every chapter in the book will give you definitive techniques can improve your life right now. You can feel differences within a couple of days. In fact, there are some exercises in the book where I actually talk about the Duchenne smile and diaphragmatic breathing and how I use those two techniques. I was going through a traumatic period in my life, and my blood pressure had crept up, but how I use these two techniques to drop my blood pressure in minutes. So these things aren't always long term. Now it doesn't remain there, but it's like exercise. You know, you're supposed to exercise several times a week. Walking is wonderful exercise for lots of different reasons. So, you know, I'm not doing the Duchenne smile and the diaphragmatic breathing constantly to keep my blood pressure down, but the more periods of time I have where I can keep it down, the better the chance my body has of healing the traumas that have gone on and actually fixing it. So yeah, for a while, you know, it was during COVID and my brother had passed away, and there was just a whole lot of stress that was going on. Lots of us experienced stress during COVID. But putting these techniques in place, you know, my blood pressure is not high now. I can keep it under control. I'm not on any meds whatsoever. And I frequently get excellent readings. They're not always excellent, but frequently I've got, you know, a blood pressure of around 110, 115 over 70, which is excellent,
That's
excellent
really good.
blood pressure. And I can do that. And if ever I, the more you pay attention to yourself, the more you tune into yourself, the more you see these things. So today, if I've got a deadline, you know, deadlines can be one of those things where, you know, I can get tighter, but I'm aware of blood pressure creeping up now. I feel it. I'm just aware. I've got this inner awareness of myself. And so I feel it. So then I can stop. I'll take a short walk. I'll take a few diaphragmatic breaths. That has been shown, that has been demonstrated to reduce your heart rate, reduce the stress hormones in your body. The Duchenne smile, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but that's the smile that reaches all the way up to your eyes. Now, this is one of those things that, you know, fascinated me as I was doing my own research, because I'd heard this idea that simply putting a pretend smile on your face will help your brain produce endorphins. It'll help you feel happier. And that sounded kind of crazy to me, but just put a pencil between your teeth and that will make you happier. But it extends even further than that, because the Duchenne smile is when the smile reaches all the way up to your eyes, when your eyes crinkle up and you have that kind of smile. And they actually looked at, there was two different research studies I looked at. One was looking at baseball cards, one was looking at high school photographs. And what they found was that the people who were smiling for their pictures in these instances would live longer. Now, if the smile was smaller, you know, if they were smiling, but it wasn't a huge, big smile, then they would live on average 2 years longer. When the smile was big, the big Duchenne smile, they could live 7 years longer. So smiling actually becomes one of the tips that I will give out. It's one of the things that I do. These days, whenever I go to the bathroom, I wash my hands, I look in the mirror, you know, we normally just check our faces to make sure everything is respectable. But we look in the mirror. And so these days, I will invariably smile at myself. And I'll tell myself, I can do this. I've got this, whatever is going on, you know, or I'll just say, I'm okay. I'm okay, it's all okay. And I will smile to myself. And, you know, that means each time I go to the bathroom, I have this little boost of these happy brain chemicals. My system calms down, my health increases, my vitality increases, my creativity opens up. You know, it's really hard to be creative when you're all stressed out and your mind's buzzing too much. You just release that. So a very simple tip that I would tell everybody, smile more and pay attention. It sounds silly, or you know, it can sound, you know, it's such a small example to say just smile, but it has huge effects across your life. And what you'll find is if you pay attention to other people, you'll find there are some people who really don't smile very much. They don't smile when they greet you. They just give that little head nod. But smiling more, smiling is infectious. So the more you smile, the more other people may smile back. And so that, again, is a spiritual aspect because it spreads.
Definitely. Well, you're hitting on something that this group is going to definitely open to, and they're going to love being able to hear more of the science behind that. I have one more question for you because we have about 5 minutes left, and it is in regards to a significant part of the book and your work, and it revolves around the idea of forgiveness, and this is a big one in the self-help world too. But can you expand on that and how you forgive the unforgivable?
Forgive the unforgivable. Yes, I think that is a huge one. The work that we do on forgiveness began when Eldon was working at the Utah State Prison. And he was trying to create programs in order to reduce aggression, reduce recidivism. And he hit upon the idea of the forgiveness set. See, what he found was lots of these inmates would blame. They would blame circumstances for the fact that they were there. So what can you expect? My mother was a hooker. My dad beat me. The next door neighbor taught me how to take drugs, whatever. They always had something else to blame for their problem. So Eldon wanted to take away the blame. So he came up with the forgiveness set. I forgive myself. I forgive all others. I am forgiven. When you hold on to blame and shame and guilt, it eats away at you. When you take self-responsibility, and that was why Eldon incorporated it in the prison study, but it was so powerful that the forgiveness set is included on every single one of our Inner Talk programs. But when you can let go of blame, shame, and guilt, you open the doors for responsibility. And if you stop and think about it, if a problem is somebody else's fault, there's nothing you can do about it because it's out of your control. But when you stop and say, I am part of this equation, what could I have done differently? I could have walked away. I could have not allowed this to happen. I could have spoken up. There are so many more places where you can create change in your own life when you take responsibility. But forgiving the unforgivable, I struggled with that one. As I said, my brother passed away during COVID. When someone passes away, there can be fights over money and all of that. It is just chaotic. But this process, I observed others. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't directly related to it, but I observed the abuse of someone I cared deeply about over fights over money. It wasn't to do with me. Forgiving the unforgivable to me, it's like, how can these people do it? I put through all the arguments, I spoke to them, I wrote to them, I did everything in my power to show them what they were doing wasn't good, it wasn't right, it wasn't spiritual, nothing got through to them. And so eventually I come down to this idea of free will. Everything is, you know, trained into your subconscious mind. Those people who are asleep, sometimes they choose to remain asleep. They are just a product of their programming. So to me, forgiving the unforgivable comes down to forgive them. They know not what they do. That's all you can do. Yeah. Isn't to say they get off free. That isn't to say, you know, a criminal shouldn't be punished. They shouldn't be put away for the safety of everyone else. But for me, it's just freeing to say, forgive them. They know not what they do, and walk away from it.
That's very powerful. And again, I want to just say I'm sorry for your loss. And I can only imagine, I can't imagine actually what you went through and all that. And to that often happens with families. It's like the loss of the person is just part of it. It's the ramifications of what happens after that can be even more heartbreaking and difficult. So thank you for being so real and authentic about your sharing and your stories. Thank you for coming on. And I want to give you an opportunity here to just let everybody know, where can they purchase your book?
Thank you so much. Yes, you can learn more about my work just by going to ravindertaylor.com. You can email me, ravinder@ravindertaylor.com. Mind training is available from all fine bookstores. You can find it online. You can go to your bookstore. If they don't have it in stock, they can order it. So yes, everywhere. And I would like it if, you know, anyone, you know, whoever buys the book, you know, go through the exercises, do the work, and then email me and tell me your experiences. I would very much enjoy that. And if you have any questions, of course, feel free to email me. That is ravinder@ravindertaylor.com.
Awesome. Perfect. I will get a link there in the chat that we have, just so that way people can find it easily. I want to thank you again for coming on. I know Raven thanks you again as well. Her connection just is having a little bit of trouble this morning. Everybody, thank you for taking a listen to Backstage Pass this morning with our very special guest, Ravinder Taylor. Please come back next week. We'll have a brand new show. Again, this is Backstage Pass here on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you listen to the world. Bye, everybody.